Ms. Caldwell.
Good morning. May it please the court, counsel. I'm Marcy Goldblum on behalf of Janet Taylor. We're here this morning because it's our position that the decision of the district court finding the government substantially justified and denying the request for EJIA fees was an abuse of discretion. In this case, Ms. Taylor was diagnosed with sarcoidosis, and in her case, it affected her lungs, it affected her breathing. In remanding the case, the magistrate judge pointed to two things. One, most specifically, in the entirety of the decision, which can be found in plaintiff's appellant's appendix from pages 25-34, in the entirety of that decision, the word obesity, weight, or depression are not even mentioned once.
But let me see if I can clarify something, Ms. Goldblum. I understand you to be taking issue with the idea that when someone is reviewing an application for fees under the statute, the appropriate perspective is to look at the government's litigating position as a whole. Now, the government advanced a number of arguments in support of the Social Security Administration's decision, and of course, in the end, it didn't succeed because there was a failure to mention the obesity, and then the magistrate judge and the district court also mentioned depression. But so, you know, you don't know, as you pointed out, I think, ex ante, which arguments are going to work and which won't. And isn't it the law that we look at the litigating position as a whole?
Actually, we don't just look at the litigating position. We look at both the pre-litigation position and the litigating position,
right.
And we look at them as a whole. What our objection to, it's not our position that the reviewing court shouldn't look globally, but when the reviewing court themselves finds that there is not a reasonable basis in fact on one of the issues for which remand was made, then when the court then comes back in the next page and says, but we're finding that as a whole, the government's position was that there was a reasonable basis in both law and fact, I'd kind of like to know how he made that jump. And I think when you look at the magistrate judge's decision here, you really don't get a sense other than him saying, well, I ruled in favor of the government in these issues, and so even though there was a mistake, there was a lack of a reasonable basis in fact here, I'm going to say that there's a reasonable basis in fact for the whole thing. And I don't think that is enough of a – it doesn't tell us how we got there. And I don't think when you look at this and when you look at the cases, the precedent, the government likes to look to Cunningham, for instance. And in the Cunningham case, what was most telling and what was distinguished here is that in Cunningham, where the court denied fees, the administrative law judge hadn't ignored evidence. And in this case, there was no recognition at all of either the obesity or the depression.
But Ms. Taylor had not made a big point about the obesity herself.
She doesn't need to.
Well, but I'm not sure about that, because it certainly is the case, as far as I know, that normal principles of harmless error and the like apply here. And if she wasn't making a big point about it, and if it might not have tipped the scales, then the government might have thought that the error, although certainly an error, not to say anything about it, wouldn't have mattered.
Well, two things about that. Number one, and I think tipping the scales, actually, ironically, in terms of obesity, is a good metaphor. But I think it is pertinent because obesity, as Social Security ruling 021P tells us, exacerbates breathing problems. And here, although the magistrate judge in remanding the case found that the ALJ's RFC and credibility were okay, had the ALJ considered the impact of obesity, then that also impacts RFC. It impacts credibility, because one of the things that obesity can do in terms of breathing problems, it affects someone's stamina. And that's something that had to be taken into consideration. And you said that she didn't talk about obesity, but she did mention depression, and that was something else that the ALJ completely ignored. And although
she'd never been treated formally for depression.
No, but she did have treating physicians who found it significant enough to make it a part of her of their treatment notes. And as as the case in Wilder tells us, when depression is not significant, those who are not mental health professionals don't always pick it up. So at least it was significant enough that a non-mental health professional did pick it up in this case. And the fact was, the administrative law judge, you know, she testified about it. It was there, but he never mentions it once. And I think there may have been things he could have done, but didn't. And as the magistrate judge...
That's not really quite the question. The question is, when the government decided throughout to defend the commissioner's position, was it so far out of bounds that, you know, and we discussed how far out of bounds that needs to be in our decision in the Tuvano case.
Right.
It's pronounced the French way. You know, we said it's above frivolous, but it's not all the way over to meritorious. It's just
right.
Has to be substantially justified.
However, the other thing to keep in mind, and I'm not sure that Tuvano mentioned this either, is that we're not just looking at what the litigation position is. We're also looking at the pre-litigation position. And the pre-litigation position is the ALJ's decision itself. And the ALJ's decision itself lacked a reasonable basis in fact in two significant areas. And we think more, but just going on what...
It lacked a basis in fact, but that wasn't the district court's reason for remanding. District court's reason for remanding was not lack of substantial evidence, but
no,
lack of explanation. What has happened on remand?
There was a hearing earlier this summer in Danville that was a Danville attorney was present, and I believe there was a favorable decision that issued.
You believe or you know?
I haven't read it, but I was told that there was a favorable decision. But if I may... I think that when you have a case where the administrative law judge completely ignores the obesity, which we think is substantial, as well as the depression that the claimant did testify to, and which appears in the records of Dr. Sadiq, and in fact, Dr. Sadiq mentions diagnosed depression and at page 256 of the record, and he refers to it again, page 253 of the record. She testified that she had problems with depression. We're not saying that the ALJ was required to find that depression was a severe impairment or that it was disabling, but what we are saying is that the fact that he completely ignored it is legal error, and that legal error combined with the fact that he also ignored her obesity, was enough error for there to be a lack of substantial justification, because as the magistrate judge noted, when
Can I interrupt you for a second?
Sure.
And ask, it seems to me that there's always going to be a reason, if you will, if there's a reversal, if there's a victory on the part of the person seeking benefits, just as Ms. Taylor was successful in her effort to get benefits. But I'm not sure what the limiting principle is. If you're saying that here it happens to be obesity and depression, that's what caused the remand, therefore the position was not substantially justified. I can't quite see where we stop on fees.
If, for instance, let's say in this case the judge had said, I know she's obese. I know there's been that her weight has added to her problems, but I don't think that that's really done anything. Or I acknowledge that she's been diagnosed with depression, but here's why I'm discounting that. there still may have been a remand if the reasons were inadequate. But I think in that case, we would have been I probably wouldn't be standing here today because we wouldn't have the arguments that we have here today.
Okay.
I see that my time is up. We ask that you reverse this case and remand it to the district court for calculation and award of benefits. I thank you.
Thank you, counsel. Mr. Jodry.
May it please the court. Good morning. My name is Jared Jodry, representing the Commissioner of Social Security. The district court did not abuse its discretion in denying Taylor's petition for attorney fees under the Equal Access to Justice Act. Instead, applying the correct legal standard and engaging in a thorough, thoughtful, and legally sound analysis, the district court correctly concluded that the commissioner's position was substantially justified. Now, Taylor clearly disagrees with that.
Let me ask you this. It seems to me there are some remands, as Ms. Goldman was starting to say when she sat down, that fundamentally are judgment issues. So, you know, maybe there's a fleeting reference to obesity. Maybe it's in a gray area, but the reviewing court thinks there need to be more proceedings. The obesity issue is something that's actually addressed in one of the commissioner's own rulings. And when something like that, fairly concrete, is missing from the administrative law judge's opinion, isn't that a different situation for the Social Security Administration? And how many opinions like that, when there's just a flat refusal to, or a flat omission to do something required by law, do you defend?
Well, in this case, I don't agree with the sort of premise of that, that there was a clear-cut failure to follow the SSR. And I think it's important to recognize...
But there's no mention, there's no analysis that, yes, she's obese, but it's because of the prednisone, and we don't think it really contributed to the breathing problems, or there's no hint that the obesity is even acknowledged, much less factored into the disability.
That's correct. It is not explicitly acknowledged in the decision. But as this court has held in Prochaska and Scarbeck, an ALJ may satisfy that SSR by adopting the opinion of a physician who was aware of the claimant's obesity.
Well, but we're making a double level of inference there. I think in some of the cases, we at least know the physicians were taking it into account.
Right. And in this case, the district court found that the reliance on, because in this case, the ALJ adopted the opinion of the state agency physicians, Dr. Virgilio and Dr. Belinsky, who based their findings on a thorough review of the claimant's medical records.
But you now, see, you're just assuming this thorough review of the record shows that, whatever, she's 5'1", 173 pounds or something.
Correct.
If I remember correctly. I don't know. At some point, the ruling becomes meaningless if you can just sort of assume that we can all, you know, it's a know-it-when-we-see-it kind of problem. We don't know how it focuses in on the actual determination of disability. Because, of course, the ALJ is overturned. You know, the ALJ didn't, whatever the ALJ decided to rely on wasn't satisfactory. We don't know why the ALJ thought that these doctors thought that somebody else thought that that the obesity didn't matter.
That's correct, and that's why the matter was remanded. But
right.
The issue before this court is not was the ALJ and the commissioner correct.
And can the commissioner defend something? That's what the question is. Can the commissioner defend something when there's such a long chain of inferences?
Yes, the commissioner can. And the issue in this case is whether, well, in this respect, Your Honor, the issue
hope
in this
you don't mean that to be without limit.
No,
otherwise,
why
are we bothering with all of
well,
this?
Well, not at all, Your Honor. I mean, the issue in this case is whether the commissioner had a reasonable basis in law and fact for its position. Now, it's worth noting that Taylor would have us all believe that the district court actually found that the commissioner lacked a reasonable basis in fact with respect to obesity. That's not what the district court found.
Well, we know what the district court said.
The district court said that the agency had a reasonable basis in law for its position with respect to obesity, but it was factually inadequate. Now, there's an important
And we have to have both fact and law, you'll agree.
There's an important distinction in EJIA cases between whether the agency was in fact correct and whether the agency was reasonable. There's a difference between a position that was factually inadequate and a position that lacked a reasonable basis in fact, between not being correct and not being reasonable.
But
they're not synonymous.
Don't give us, throw us a bone, when you don't give us any reason to think that the agency was even considering obesity. It's like any factual determination. Jury verdicts will be overturned if evidence is excluded that should have come in because you don't know how the jury may have come out if it had had the full picture. Same thing is true here. We don't know how the ALJ would have come out if he or she really directed attention to this point.
That's correct, and that is why the matter was remanded. But the fact that the matter was remanded is not enough to establish that the government's position was not substantially justified.
I totally agree with that.
Right, and in this case, it was substantially justified both in law and fact with respect to obesity. In law, it was in accordance with this court's holding in Prochaska and Scarbuck in that, the ALJ may satisfy that SSR if the ALJ relies on a doctor opinion when that doctor was aware of the claimant's obesity. So it was reasonable in law. And in fact, it was as well, because the ALJ did in fact rely on the opinion of state agency physicians.
Well, but that's not what the magistrate judge says. What the magistrate judge says is, in this case, the ALJ failed to mention or consider plaintiff's obesity in combination with all of her impairments. Moreover, although several doctors noted plaintiff's obesity, the ALJ did not rely on opinions from those doctors.
Right.
So your other cases are cases in which the ALJ does rely on the opinions of the doctors who had noted the obesity. And the magistrate judge goes on to say this is particularly significant here because of 02-1P.
That's correct, Your Honor. And the district court clearly found that the reliance on a state agency physician, given the particular circumstances of this case, was one step too far removed. And in that sense, the agency's position was not correct. But that's not the standard for an EJIA analysis, Your Honor. The standard, did the agency have a reasonable basis to make that argument?
When and an ALJ does not rely on the opinions from doctors who were aware of the obesity.
Well,
I'm worried that you're sort of sliding over as if the fact that there's some doctor out there is enough.
Well, not just some doctor out there.
The ALJ didn't rely on.
The ALJ explicitly relied and adopted the position, gave significant weight to the opinions of the state agency physicians. State agency physicians based their findings on a review of the medical record. They were presumably aware of Taylor's obesity.
Well,
now,
but
that
what
may
do you
not
do
be
with this sentence from the magistrate judge's opinion, then? This that I'm looking at on page 8 of his opinion.
Right, and the magistrate found that wasn't sufficient, that we hadn't relied on the actual underlying physician opinions that addressed obesity, so we were incorrect. But that's not the standard for an award of fees under EJIA, and that's the difference between being wrong and being reasonable is the important distinction in this case. And it's important. In Taylor's briefs, that she conflates the two as if in finding that the government's position was factually inadequate, that's the same thing as finding that the government's position was not reasonable.
I don't think she's doing that, actually. I think she's just saying when the amount of discussion is zero and you don't know how that factored in, that's too low.
Well, that's not
how it becomes unreasonable.
Well, the district court
the district court found, I understand.
Right, the district court that was involved in the underlying case, that evaluated the merits decision, that was familiar with the record and with the arguments brought in by both parties. And this court has held that when the same court, the same judge that evaluates the case on the merits also finds that the government's position was substantially justified, that finding is entitled to substantial weight on appeal. And that's what we have here. And so, at the end of the day, although Taylor pays lip service to the idea that the court may engage in a global analysis, she essentially says that we prefer that the court limit its review to only those issues on which remand was deemed necessary. And that's not the standard, as you've acknowledged earlier today, as this court held in Gatimi. The EJIA analysis necessitates an assessment of the government's overall position. And that's what the court did. Taylor argues that the court utilized an erroneous legal standard in engaging in that global analysis. That's not true. And as this court held in, found in Hallmark and in Stewart, you know, the mere fact that a party prevailed on a single issue is rarely, rarely dispositive as to whether the government's overall position was substantially justified. In fact, in Stewart, this court said that regardless of the basis for remand, the court is tasked with engaging in precisely that global analysis Taylor objects to. And so with respect to the issue of obesity, the government's position was reasonable in law and reasonable in fact, although factually inadequate. And when you consider that the standard of review in this case is deferential and abuse of discretion, we ask that the court find the district court did not abuse its discretion in finding that the government's position was, in fact, substantially justified. Mm-hmm.